Ladies and gentlemen, thank you for joining today's live audio conference call. All lines will be in a listen-only mode, and there will be a question and answer session at the end of the call. Your host for today is Ms. Tracy O'Malley. Ms. O'Malley, you may now begin.
Hello, everyone. My name is Tracy O'Malley. I'm the Executive Director of the PLUS Group and would like to thank you for taking your time to join us for the PLUS Group DID training. Today's topic is the Why Occupations and will be presented to you by Steve Brady of The Standard. Hopefully you have the presentation so that you can follow along. If you don't have it, you can go to our website at www.plusgroupus.com, and on the right side of the page under 2011 live conference schedule, you'll need to click and you'll see where it says the Why Occupations. It'll take you to another page and the presentation is on the bottom of that page. We hope that you enjoy this, and please feel free to jot down any questions because, as we mentioned, you will have an opportunity at the end to ask any questions. Okay, I'm going to turn this over to Steve now.
All right, Tracy, thank you very much. I appreciate this opportunity to talk to myself and pretend that there's some folks out there listening. And I think that it's a great concept that the PLUS Group is putting this together on a monthly basis, and certainly it's a great opportunity for us to talk about disability insurance and the PLUS Group. The PLUS Group is an organization of independent, passionate people who help sell disability insurance and represent several companies, of which Standard is just one of the carriers. So my words will generally be universal in tone, and that I won't be pushing the Standard, so to speak, but all disability companies. And then Tracy has asked if I would highlight our newest product at the end for just a bit, and then, of course, we'll open it to questions and answers. Why occupations is an interesting subject. The importance to you and to other carriers is that addressing this subject is the if you go the normal course of trying to sell disability insurance like you would to a doctor, you'll find that you'll run into a lot of stumbling blocks. So why occupations? And the reason for this discussion today is to talk about how do you sell to those who are not as familiar to the disability awareness that a physician might be. And physicians, going down to point number two, are great prospects. And obviously they work with disability all day long. They are trained on disability insurance as the importances while they're even in medical school. They know what features they want. They know what to look for. And it's a pretty easy process, as you can generally start with just the proposal. But when you're dealing with an occupation that is not familiar with disability insurance, then you've got to back it up a few steps. And I like to liken this unto, you know, riding a motorcycle. Which I did this morning. I rode my Harley into work this morning. And if I start in first gear, you know, at the stoplight, then it's, you know, generally going to work out okay. But if I start in fourth gear, like I could with a physician, you know, I'm already rolling down the road. He or she's already assuming a lot of things that I don't need to go over as far as the need for disability. And so when I'm talking with a non-physician, I really need to get back to first gear. And so that's how we get to this third point. How do you sell to why occupations? Starting in first gear. And I very much appreciate the fact that LIMRA did a study recently about greatest asset. What is your greatest asset? And most folks said, you know, their home, their retirement plans. Very few, in fact, only one out of six said that it was their income. And that's where we need to start with these why occupations is what is their income? And step number four, you know, when we're finding a prospect, certainly we're looking for a professional, we're looking for a business owner, we're looking for somebody who's independent enough that if they're taken out of the picture because of a disabling illness or accident, there's impact. There's impact to the business, there's impact to their purchasing power, there's impact to, you know, what they've built. And I like to ask a lot of questions in this regard about their passion towards their occupation. Why are they doing what they're doing? And what is it that drives them or makes them distinctive from others in that same arena? competitive wise, and what value do they bring to their type of business. And understanding someone's passion and their business and their occupation and why they chose that is very important when we want to close the sale. If you move on to step five, establish the need. You know, we start with this standard of living with how much income do you make and how many years before age 65, and, you know, isn't this your greatest asset? And to get them to move on to step six, to believe in the value of disability insurance, I generally use five steps. And the five steps of disability is probably the best way to explain disability, because most folks think, when you say the word disability, they think of the car accident and inducing a paraplegic situation and someone's confined to a wheelchair. And although that happens and it is catastrophic, there's, you know, less than a 1% chance that someone's going to have that experience. And so when people picture that in their mind of disability being a wheelchair-bound situation and that the likelihood is so low, you'll find that most often they don't believe disability is going to happen to them. And so the reason for the five steps of disability, after you've built the foundation of what is their greatest asset, is it allows them to see that disability is more than just the catastrophic. It's more than just the car accident causing a wheelchair bound. So the first of the five steps is total permanent. The second is total long-term. The third is total partial disability. The fourth is partial progressive. And the fifth is short-term total and or partial. So just to start those over again, number one is total permanent, number two, total long-term, number three, total partial, number four, partial progressive, and number five, short-term. And so we start with the first one, total permanent. This is where the car accident caused paraplegic would occur. All of your presumptive claims would fit into this arena. And when I use the word presumptive, that's a terminology from the disability policy. Regardless of who it's, you know, Matt, Union Central, Principal, Standard, Guardian, Mass, Northwestern, they all use that same term, presumptive. And so you're presumed disabled. And so I'll use that word with a client because it is, you know, it is a good word to use. We're presuming that you're disabled if you lose your eyesight or your hearing or your speech, use of your hands, use of your feet. And because we're presuming you're disabled, even if you went to work, we would still pay the full benefit. And all these carriers would still pay the full benefit. And so we get that aside. The total permanent type of disability, that answers probably what you had in your mind as picturing disability. You know, that encompasses, you know, not just being paralyzed. Obviously, you've lost the use of your feet, but it also encompasses eyesight, hearing, speech, and et cetera. Moving on to total long-term, this allows the client to start to understand that there's more to disability than just the catastrophic or presumptive. And typically I'll talk about a back problem. Since back problems are the leading disabling event for all carriers, I'll talk about a back problem and how that could cause a disability to last for a long time. And I'll often use a statistic. Actuarially, there are statistics out there that says, you know, if you're under age 40, your disability is going to last at least 5.1 years. 40 to 44, it's 6.6 years. 45 to 49, it's also 6.6 years. 50 to 54, it's 5.6 years. 55 to 59, it's 3.8 years. You know, that length of disability is the average. And so I talk about claims that, you know, certainly recover before that and certainly take longer than that. But when we talk about long-term disability, we're talking about 5 years. And most people, you know, they think about disability in either very extreme, I'm paralyzed, or I'm going to recover within a year. And so I'll talk about this 5 years in this long-term disability arena and talking about back problems. And I'll talk about Social Security. And I said, most people don't realize that Social Security pays a disability benefit. It does need to be long-term. In fact, the definition of disability for them is it looks like it's going to last a year or result in your death. There are benefits that come to you as a primary, and then if you've got family, there are some benefits involved there, but very hard to qualify. In fact, over 80% of the people don't qualify, even though their disability is severe. One claimant that I talked with, you know, made the mistake of walking into the Social Security office and was turned right around and said, if you can walk, you're not qualified to have benefits. So Social Security and workers' comp, those benefits are out there. They're available, just very hard to collect. And so we'll talk about the long-term total disability and focus on the back and talk about if you couldn't do your occupation because of a back problem, what would you do? If you have this passion about what you wanted to do all your life, you're doing it now, but let's say a back disorder forces you away from that, what would you do? And I'm often surprised by their answer because they'll usually talk about something that I had no clue going into the meeting that, you know, they had a passion for. It could be anything. I want to start a 7-Eleven. I want to be a speaker. I want to, you know, help this nonprofit organization. I really always wanted to write. I think I would just travel. I mean, it's always something that just is, their eyes light up when they talk about it. Even though they're forced out of their occupation at the moment, mentally, their eyes light up about what they would do. And I asked them if they would expect to collect full benefits. And they, of course, say, yeah, if I'm disabled from my occupation, I expect to collect full benefits from that occupation the whole time. And then I'll often ask, if you went into something else, if you did something that created income, would you still expect to get full benefits? And often they'll say yes. And I just mentally note that down when I get to the point of actually talking about a proposal. I'll just kind of mentally, you know, file that away to say, you know, I want to bring that up maybe at a later time. The third one, total partial, I'll generally talk about a heart attack or a stroke, and often I'll spend more time on the heart attack, and I'll picture this, paint this picture of a type A person, stress-related job, and has a heart attack, anxiety, stress-related heart attack. And the problem with someone in that situation is, when they come back to work and the doctor says, you know, you can't mimic what you've been doing. You can't work the 80 hours a week. You can't push yourself the way you've been pushing. You can't maintain the same pace. Even if you work the hours, you can't maintain the same pace or it's going to happen again. That is the most difficult thing to do with these type A's. It's hard to slow somebody down. And so we'll talk about the difficulty in slowing somebody down. And even though a disabling event has occurred, heart attack, and even though their perspective on life has changed, and most people who go through a heart attack, all of a sudden their priorities are different, they still fall into the same habits as far as work defining them and working hard as being a differentiator, and that edge that they like to compete on being where they get that adrenaline rush with work. And it's often unfortunate because then the second heart attack occurs, and which is even more debilitating than the first one was. And so we'll talk about that. And as we've merged through now three of these, the total permanent, total long-term, and the total partial, the client starts warming up about understanding disability, and some emotions get involved, some emotions of, gee, I know somebody who's gone through that, or some emotions of, now, this is striking a little closer to home than I expected this discussion to be, because when it was in my mind that it was a car accident-induced paralysis, you know, that's pretty distant. I can stay emotionally clear of that and not get involved and not really feel anything. But now I'm getting a little bit of a closer to home, and it's feeling a little uncomfortable, and I start to see that in their signs of their nonverbal signs. I start to see them get a little uncomfortable. They're sitting a little more upright. They're a little closer to the yellow pad I might be using to write these things down. Their questions are a little more pointed. You can tell that it's becoming a little more personal, and that's exactly what I want. I want their buying temperature to go up with each one. I then move to the fourth one. The fourth one is where I'll spend the most time, and it's called partial progressive. And a partial progressive claim, and I'll ask them, I'll say, do you know something that's generally slows a person down or limits their ability, diminished capacity, and then gets progressively worse over time? It might be years before it actually would be defined as a total disability. And generally, they know somebody with MS, arthritis, diabetes, cancer, AIDS, Parkinson's, lupus. Stories will start to come out, and feelings, of course, are now heightened, because it's now become very personal. And this is where I spend most of my time, because this is an eye-opening experience for them. Again, we're talking about why occupations that haven't had the experience that physicians have had as far as understanding disability. And so this is very eye-opening to them. They start understanding that I'm talking about something that's very personal, that's very probable. So when I say something like it's three times more likely to have a disabling event during your working years than dying, then they start believing that, yeah, that sounds real. That sounds true. It starts ringing, resonating inside them. And that's the buying process. So I talk about partial progressive, and I talk about how sporadic MS might be, and it might, you know, the usual onsets are in the young 30s. It might be 10, 15 years before it is a total disability. Sometimes it's blindness. Sometimes it's wheelchair confining. Sometimes it's years before it's a total disabling event. And I talk about the importance of contractual language at this point. And I talk about how sickness, some policies will use the word contracted and some will use manifested. And most of the quality carriers, all the quality carriers that the PLUS Group represents, use the words manifested. And then that's a very important word, because we're talking about if, for example, I have cancer and I don't know I have cancer when I sign the application and have the policy delivered and it manifests itself afterwards, then that's a covered claim. But if the word is contracted and I don't know I have cancer and I sign the application and have the policy delivered and then it manifests itself, but the policy language says, no, for sickness it's contracted and the doctor says you've had this cancer for 6 months beforehand, then it's a denied claim. And that's obviously the most expensive disability insurance possible is when it's denying the claim. So a word like that is important. Another word that's important is total compensable. If I'm a professional and I have the association insurance, if it's the AICPA or the ABA for the lawyers, or if it's the AVMA for veterinarians or ADA for the dentists or AMA for doctors, it doesn't matter. They're all the same. They all use this word, total compensable. And so even though their brochures highlight, gee, we'll pay during a partial disability, the fine print takes it away if it falls into this category number four. If it is a partial progressive disability, they will not pay the claim until it's a total disability that's been paid. It's compensable. And that is where I have found the most sales opportunities in my career, 30-plus years, is I'll run into a professional who has one of these national association plans, and it's a very low premium, and he or she will say, you know, you're the 20th agent to look at my DI policy. Nobody can compete with it, but they're thinking price, and I've got to get them away from thinking price. And so I'll just ask the question, if you had MS, and it was sporadic, and your work was sporadic, and you lost some income because you could only work part days or some days, and you filed a claim and they sent it back to you denying your claim, would you be upset? Well, of course I'd be upset, but why would they deny the claim? Well, there's a word in there, total compensable. Those two words say that they can deny your claim until you're totally disabled, and it may be years before your disability becomes total compensable. Then all of a sudden they've moved away from price. They've moved to words because I've created a situation in their mind that's very real, very possible, and they may have seen it happen before, and there's no way they could be expected to understand what's inside their policy. And so the purpose of talking to occupations like this is to help them understand disability insurance so they make that decision to buy it. All right? So when I go through those four, I get to the fifth one, the short-term total or partial. Now, that's a very easy one. It's usually a fracture or a sprain or, you know, hepatitis or something that's, you know, recoverable within a decent amount of time. And most people can self-insure or self-fund that era. So that's not the problem. The problem is getting down to number four. And having, if number four happens, which is the most likely claim scenario, having a disability policy that pays in that scenario. So that's number six, educating your prospects until they believe in the value. And I go through those five steps. It takes a few minutes, but it gives them something tangible that they can measure any disability insurance policy on, and that every disability event fits into one of those five. So I don't have to talk about the thousands and thousands of different ailments and accidents. I can just narrow it down to something that's understandable with those five. And then I go for the close. And this is where most people open the sale. I show the proposal. Here's based on your occupation. Here's based on your age. Here's based on your income. Here's the maximum you can get. We can whittle it down from there as far as your needs are concerned. I generally show a 90-day wait to the longest benefit period available for that occupation, and I start talking about it. Is 90 days, you know, a good period of time, because you actually don't get a check until about the 120th day? Is this to age 65 or 67 going to work, or do we need to look at something shorter to save some money? Is this monthly benefit enough to support your standard of living, realizing that it's tax-free? And then we start from there. Are these riders important to you? Do they bring value to you? Most agents make the mistake of opening the sale with a proposal. Here, I've shopped it around. Here's three or four different carriers. And that creates that analysis paralysis that won't let you close the sale. You haven't raised the temperature. You're starting, you know, at the stop sign in fourth gear in your motorcycle. And it just is hard to do. It's really hard to do. And you'll get discouraged. So close the sale with a proposal instead of opening the sale. That's what I have found to be the secret. Then it's much easier to walk through the nuances of the product, the definitions, the features, the pricing. Then it makes it a lot easier for them to see the value. The last step I've got is managing the transaction. And certainly, if you fill out the application or do a PHI or a tele-app, you still have to make the sale work during that underwriting process, whether it's, you know, 2 weeks or 6 weeks or 8 weeks. And generally what I tell people is I give them information up front, and this is what I mean by manage the transaction. I tell them up front that 50% of applications that go into the home office come back changed, and that's an industry rule. It's very close to being that for every company. And some of the applications are declined. Some of the applications are modified because the occupation class or the income or the features or there was a medical history problem. And so I try to give them up front that warning so that during the process, if I find it needs a back exclusion or limitation of some sort, they're not surprised. I said very few people get a policy as applied for. And our underwriting is such that, and this is true for every company, our underwriting is such is that, you know, we're betting on those folks that they're never going to get disabled. They're so healthy and wonderful and safe and conservative that, you know, we're betting, I don't think that's going to happen. Whereas those that probably are going to have a disability will probably either get declined or have some modification, have some exclusion, have some limitation. And those are the ones that are difficult for most people to place, but actually are the most important to be placed, because it's obvious to us and to every other carrier that there's something in here that could go awry in the next 20 or 30 years. So that's the process. That's what do I try to talk about when I'm talking to why occupations. And I think that there's some value in talking to other than physicians. I think that physicians are great clients, but certainly the others that you talk to, the architects and engineers and the accountants and the attorneys and all the way to plumbers and roofers and garbage truck drivers and everybody, when you get outside the doctors and you get into this more difficult sale, you also find out that there's no competition, because you're probably the first one to bring it up to them and talk about it to them. And so they buy you. It doesn't matter what company you represent. They're buying you because you opened up this problem to them and you're trying to solve it. And I have found most of the joy I've had in selling has been with those why occupations. It's great diversity for a company. It's great diversity for your own book of business. But it's also a lot of fun in talking to folks who don't understand the idea and see the idea go off as a light in their head and appreciate the buying process, appreciate being sold something that is valuable to them that they had no idea it was available to them. So that's part of all the reasoning for this discussion today, to talk about those things. That's that presentation. Now, Tracy asked if I would also just share a bit about our new product. It's a bit controversial, and so I'll just put it in a synopsis and certainly steer you towards your local Plus Group office for more details on this presentation as well as on our new product. But the new product is simply this. It's still a guaranteed renewable chassis, except this time we've tried to make it simple. We built everything in it. It has pure own occupation built in. It has unlimited mental disorder substance abuse built in. It has a very rich partial disability that doesn't even require loss of income to pay 100% benefits the first 6 months built in. It has a compassionate care feature that pays the insured even though the disabled is not the insured. If the disabled is a loved one, a spouse, a child, a parent, and the caring of that loved one causes the loss of income, we pay a benefit. All these things are built in. We still have a non-can rider for those who like that premium guarantee. We still have cost of living rider, future purchase option rider, a catastrophic rider, but those are the only four riders. Everything else is built in. And the uniqueness is that it's for all occupations. It doesn't matter if you're a 5A or if you're down at the bottom as a blue-collar B occupation. The policy is the same for everybody. So that's the simplicity of it. So that's the plug on the standard new Platinum product. So, Tracy, I'm opening it up to questions.
Okay. Operator, we're ready for questions when you are.
Ladies and gentlemen, at this time, if you have any questions or comments, please press the number one key on your phone. Again, if you have any questions, please press the number one key on your phone. Our first question comes from Corey Anderson. Mr. Anderson.
Steve, can you hear me?
I can hear you.
Wonderful. Good to hear your voice. Hey, wanted to follow up on the six-month partial. If you can dive into that more about what that means. Like, for example, if they're back to, if they've been out of work for 3 months, they've set aside the waiting period, they started to receive benefits, and now they're back to work full-time and still have no loss of, and they don't have any loss of income, is the benefit stopped then, or can you get more into the details of that six-month partial?
The six-month partial, we used to require that you have a loss of income and a loss of duties or loss of time to satisfy the waiting period. And to collect benefits, you had to show at least a 20% loss of income and a loss of time or duties to pay benefits. And similar to all the other carriers, you have it a 20% loss of income. We would pay 50% benefit the first 6 months and then the actual loss after that. This new Platinum product took away those requirements that you could have a loss of income or a loss of duties or a loss of time to satisfy the waiting period and to collect 100% benefit the first 6 months. So the basics are that where we required at least a 20% loss of income, you could actually qualify for 100% disability during the first 6 months of claim, you know, past the waiting period with no loss of income, as long as you had a loss of duties or a loss of time because of the disability. And then after the 6 months, it's loss of income only. The duties or time is also waived, and then there's a full recovery on it. So even if you don't have the doctor's care anymore, benefits would go to the whole benefit period as long as you had a loss of income.
Thank you.
Thank you. It's a good question.
Again, ladies and gentlemen, if you have any questions at this time, please press the number one key on your phone. There are no further questions at this time.
Okay, great, Steve. Thank you very much, and thank you, everyone, for joining us today. If you have any additional questions, please contact your local Plus Group office. Also, we have recorded this call, and once we have that recording, we will be hanging it on our website at www.plusgroupus.com. We hope you'll join us next month on August 17th. Our next topic will be DI buyout, presented by MetLife. Again, please contact your local Plus Group office for more information. Again, Steve, thank you, and thank you to everyone for joining us today. Bye-bye.